The Balut Kiki Project is a proud member of Bunk Collective.
I loved you then, I love you now, and I will continue loving you until I can no longer.
You took a part of me until I had nothing left.
The old me had to die, so the new me could be reborn.
I didn't deserve that, babe. I deserve love, just not from her.
Today, I choose myself.
I wanted to tell you, but you weren't there.
These are the stories that I wish you heard. Streaming weekly episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
It's another day, it's another project. This is a Balut Kiki project. Do I see the things on the top before?
What's equality mean to you, Freya?
Breaky, boop, boop.
Rolling!
Uniquely Pinoy, unapologetically queer. The Balut Kiki Project.
It's another day, it's another project. This is the Balut Kiki Project. I am Freya. I am 8 years old. I love to act, sing, dance, and swim. Don't forget to click, like, follow, and subscribe.
I'm going to read a poem written by a girl just 1 year older than me. I think it's great. It's about equality. Equality means to me, like, being together and not being unfair. I am a girl who wants equality. I wonder about the people on the wet streets. I hear them calling out for help. I see everybody being equal. I'm a girl who wants equality. I pretend racism is not there. I feel people reaching out for me. I touch them back in hope. I worry about everybody in need. I cry about how people act to disabled people. I am a girl who wants equality. I understand how some people get paid more than others. I say fairness to everyone. I try to do the best for impartiality. I hope my dreams come true. I am a girl who wants equality.
Dublin, Ireland, February 18, 1872. If you are the man I take you to be, you will like to get this letter. If you are not, I don't care whether you like it or not, and only ask that you put it into the fire without reading any farther. But I believe you will like it. I don't think there is a man living, even you who are above the prejudices of the class of small-minded men, who wouldn't like to get a letter from a younger man, a stranger, across the world, a man living in an atmosphere prejudiced to the truths you sing and your manner of singing them. The idea that arises in my mind is whether there is a man living who would have the pluck to burn a letter in which he felt the smallest atom of interest without reading it. I believe you would, and that you believe you would yourself. You can burn this now and test yourself. And all I will ask for my trouble of writing this letter, which for all I can tell you may light your pipe with or apply to some more ignoble purpose, is that you will, in some manner, let me know that my words have tested your impatience. Put it in the fire if you like, but if you do, you will miss the pleasure of the next sentence, which ought to be that you have conquered an unworthy impulse. A man who is certain of his own strength might try to encourage himself a piece of bravo, but a man who can write, as you have written, the most candid words that ever fell from the lips of a mortal man, a man to whose candor Rousseau's confessions is reticence, can have no fear for his own strength. If you have gone this far, you may read the letter, and I feel in writing now that I am talking to you. If I were before your face, I would like to shake hands with you, for I feel that I would like you. I would like to call you comrade, and to talk to you as men who are not poets do not often talk. I think that at first a man would be ashamed, for a man cannot in a moment break the habit of comparative reticence that has become second nature to him. But I know I would not long be ashamed to be natural before you. You are a true man, and I would like to be one myself. And so I would be towards you as a brother and as a pupil to his master. In this age, no man becomes worthy of the name without an effort. You have shaken off the shackles, and your wings are free. I have the shackles on my shoulder still, but I have no wings. If you are going to read this letter any further, I should tell you that I am not prepared to give up all else, so far as words go. The only thing I am prepared to give up is prejudice, and before I knew you, I had begun to throw overboard my cargo, but it is not all gone yet. I do not know how you will take this letter. I have not addressed you in any form, as I hear that you dislike, to a certain degree, the conventional forms in letters. I am writing to you because you are different from other men. If you were the same as the mass, I would not write at all. As it is, I must either call you Walt Whitman or not call you at all, and I have chosen the latter course. I do not know whether it is unusual for you to get letters from utter strangers who have not even the claim of literary brotherhood to write you. If it is, you must be frightfully tormented with letters, and I'm sorry to have written this. I have, however, the claim of liking you, for your words are your own soul. And even if you do not read my letter, it is no less a pleasure to me to write it. Shelley wrote to William Godwin, and they became friends. I am not Shelley, and you are not Godwin, and so I will only hope that sometime I may meet you face to face and perhaps shake hands with you. If I ever do, it will be one of the greatest pleasures of my life. The way I came to you is this. A notice of your poems appeared some 2 years ago or more in Temple Bar magazine. I glanced at it and took its dictum as final and laughed at you among friends. I say it to my own shame, but not to regret, for it has taught me a lesson to last my life out without ever having seen your poems. More than a year after I heard two men in college talking of you, one of them had your book, Rossetti's edition, and was reading aloud some passages at which both laughed. They chose only those passages which are most foreign to British ears and made fun of them. Something struck me that I had judged you hastily. I took home the volume and read far into the night. Since then, I have to thank you for many happy hours. For I have read your poems with my door locked late at night, and I have read them on the seashore where I could look all around me and see no more sign of human life than the ships out at sea. And here, I often found myself waking up from a reverie with a book open before me. I love all poetry, and high generous thoughts make the tears rush to my eyes, but sometimes a word or a phrase of yours takes me away from the world around me and places me in an ideal land surrounded by realities more than any poem I ever read. Last year, I was sitting on the beach on a summer's day, reading your preface to The Leaves of Grass as printed in Rossetti's edition. One thought struck me, and I pondered over it for several hours. The weather-beaten vessels entering new ports. You who wrote the words know them better than I do. And to you who sing of your land of progress, the words have a meaning that I can only imagine. But be assured of this, Walt Whitman, that a man of less than half your own age, reared a conservative in a conservative country, and who has always heard your name cried down by the great mass of people who mention it, here, felt his heart leap towards you, across the Atlantic, and his soul swelling at the words, or rather, the thoughts. It is vain for me to quote an instance of what thoughts of yours I like best, for I like them all, and you must feel you are reading the true words of one who feels with you. You see, I have called you by your name. I have been more candid with you, have said more about myself to you than I have said to anyone before. You will not be angry with me if you have read so far. You will not laugh at me for writing this to you. It was no small effort that I began to write, and I feel reluctant to stop, but I must not tire you anymore. If you would ever care to have more, you can imagine, for you have a great heart, how much pleasure it would be to me to write more to you. How sweet a thing it is for a strong, healthy man with a woman's eye and a child's wishes to feel that he can speak to a man who can be, if he wishes, father and brother and wife to his soul. I don't think you will laugh, Walt Whitman, nor despise me, but at all events, I thank you for all the love and sympathy you have given me in common with my kind. Bram Stoker.
To sea, sweeter than honey or honeycomb, sends all the love there is to her love. You, who are unique and special, why do you make delay so long, so far away? Why do you want your only one to die, who, as you know, loves you with soul and body, who sighs for you at every hour, at every moment, like a hungry little bird. Since I've had to be without your sweetest presence, I have not wished to hear or see any other human being. But as the turtle dove, having lost its mate, perches forever on its little dried up branch, so I lament endlessly till I shall enjoy your trust again. I look about and do not find my lover. She does not comfort me even with a single word. Indeed, when I reflect on the loveliness of her most joyful speech and aspect, I am utterly depressed, for I find nothing now that I could compare with your love, sweet beyond honey and honeycomb, compared with which the brightness of gold and silver is tarnished. What more? In you is all gentleness, all perfection, so my spirit languishes perpetually by your absence. You are devoid of the gall of any faithlessness. You are sweeter than milk and honey. You are peerless among thousands. I love you more than any. You alone are my love and longing. You, the sweet cooling of my mind. No joy for me anywhere without you. All that was delightful with you is wearisome and heavy without you. So I truly do want to tell you, if I could buy your life for the price of mine, I'd do it instantly. For you are the only woman I have chosen according to my heart. Therefore, I beseech God that bitter death may not come to me before I enjoy the dearly desired sight of you again. Farewell. Have of me all the faith and love there is. Accept the writing I send, and with it, my constant mind. Without you, all that's joyous and delightful becomes like mud trodden underfoot. Instead of rejoicing, I shed tears. My spirit never appears joyful. When I remember the kisses he gave, and with what words of joy he caressed my little breasts. I want to die, as I am not allowed to see you. What shall I, unhappiest, do? Where shall I, the poorest, turn? Oh, if my body had been consigned to the earth till your longed-for return, or if Habakkuk's trance journey came upon me, that I might once come to see my lover's face, then I'd not care if that hour I should die. For in the world there is no woman born so lovable, so dear, one who loves me without feigning, with such deep love. So I shall not cease to feel the endless pain till I win the sight of you again. Indeed, as a certain wise man says, it is a great misery for a man not to be with him without whom he cannot be. While the world lasts, you'll never be effaced from the center of my heart. Why say more? Return, sweet love. Do not delay your journey longer. Know that I cannot bear your absence longer. Farewell. Remember me. To G, her one and only rose. From A. Thank you.
1896, HM Prison, Reading. Dear Bosie, after long and fruitless waiting, I have determined to write to you myself, as much for your sake as for mine, as I would not like to think that I had passed through 2 long years of imprisonment without ever having received a single line from you, or any news, or message even, except such as gave me pain. Our ill-fated and most lamentable friendship has ended in ruin and public infamy for me. Yet the memory of our ancient affection is often with me, and the thought that loathing, bitterness, and contempt should forever take that place in my heart once held by love is very sad to me. And you yourself will, I think, feel in your heart that to write to me as I lie in the loneliness of prison life is better than to publish my letters without my permission, or to dedicate poems to me unasked, though the world will know nothing of whatever words of grief or passion, of remorse or indifference you may choose to send as your answer or your appeal. But most of all, I blame myself for the entire ethical degradation I allowed you to bring on me. The basis of character is willpower, and my willpower became absolutely subject to yours. It sounds a grotesque thing to say, but it is nonetheless true. You wore one out. It was the case of that tyranny of the weak over the strong, which somewhere in one of my plays I describe as being the only tyranny that lasts. And it was inevitable. Society is thrilled with the absurd rumors that I have had to pay a huge sum of money for having written an infamous letter to you. This forms the basis of your father's worst attack. I produced the original letter myself in court to show what it really is. It is denounced by your father's counsel as a revolting and insidious attempt to corrupt innocence. Ultimately, it forms part of a criminal charge. The Crown takes it up, the judge sums up on it with little learning and much morality. I go to prison for it at last. That is the result of writing you a charming letter. There is, I know, one answer to all that I have said to you, and that is that you love me. That all through those 2.5 years during which the fates were weaving into one scarlet pattern the threads of our divided lives, you really loved me. Yes, I know you did. No matter what your conduct to me was, I always felt that at heart you really did love me. Though I saw quite clearly that my position in the world of art, the interest my personality had always excited, my money, the luxury in which I lived, the 1,001 things that went to make up a life so charmingly and so wonderfully improbable as mine was, were, each and all of them, elements that fascinated you and made you cling to me. Yet, besides all this, there was something more. Some strange attraction for you. You loved me far better than you loved anybody else. But you, like myself, have had a terrible tragedy in your life, though one of an entirely opposite character to mine. Do you want to learn what it was? It was this. In you, hate was always stronger than love. Your hatred of your father was of such stature that it entirely outstripped, overthrew, and overshadowed your love of me. There was no struggle between them at all, or but little.
of such dimensions were your hatred and of such monstrous growth. You did not realize that there is no room for both passions in the same soul. They cannot live together in that fair carven house. Love is fed by the imagination, by which we become wiser than we know, better than we feel, nobler than we are, by which we can see life as a whole, by which and by which alone we can understand others in their real as in their ideal relations. Only what is fine and finely conceived can feed love, but anything will feed hate. There was not a glass of champagne you drank, not a rich dish you ate in all of those years that did not feed your hate and make it fat. So to gratify it, you gambled with my life as you gambled with my money, carelessly, recklessly, indifferent to the consequence. If you lost, the loss would not, you fancied, be yours. If you won, yours, you knew, would be the exaltation and the advantages of victory. You see that I have to write your life to you, and you have to realize it. We have known each other now for more than 4 years. Half of the time we have been together. The other half, I've had to spend in prison as the result of our friendship. Where you will receive this letter, if indeed it ever reaches you, I don't know. Rome, Naples, Paris, Venice, some beautiful city on sea or river, I have no doubt holds you. You are surrounded, if not with all the useless luxury you had with me, at any rate with everything that is pleasurable to eye, ear, and taste. Life is quite lovely to you. And yet, if you are wise and wish to find life much lovelier still and in a different manner, you will let the reading of this terrible letter, for such I know it is, prove to you as important a crisis and turning point of your life as the writing of it is to me. Your pale face used to flush easily with wine or pleasure. If you read what is here written, it from time to time becomes scorched, as though by furnace blast, with shame. It will be all the better for you. The supreme vice is shallowness. Whatever is realized is right. You came to me to learn the pleasure of life and the pleasure of art. Perhaps I am chosen to teach you something much more wonderful, the meaning of sorrow and its beauty. Your affectionate friend, Oscar Wilde.
Just been served. This has been the Balut Kiki Project, uniquely Pinoy, unapologetically queer. We are now declaring this project complete.
Thank you for clicking play. Don't forget to subscribe or follow on your favorite podcast streaming platform. And leave us a 5-star rating if you enjoyed the show.